space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise, its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I make music with my friends.
He's got a laptop. There it is. He's got a laptop.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
So if you have nothing in common with Tutankhamun, you're not alone. So just walk like an Egyptian anyway. Because scientists have finally discovered the true purpose of the pyramids. Author Mark Twain once said, "It ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so." So watch this. The Great Pyramid of Giza is a magnificent tomb that was constructed to highlight the majesty of Egyptian pharaohs. Well, that's what we studied at school. And that's exactly what many researchers thought. Yeah, past tense. Brace yourself, folks, because it looks as if scientists have finally discovered the true purpose of the pyramids. It seems these mysterious and unique structures, built with incredible mathematical precision, might have had a function that was a far cry from burying the dead. Ooh, I want my mummy. Now, before we uncover one of the biggest secrets on our planet, please remember to subscribe to our channel and ring that notification bell. That way, you'll be the first to see all the daily updates on the bright side of life. The Great Pyramid of Giza is called great for a reason. Probably because no one would show up to see the pretty good Pyramid of Giza, right? No, that's not it. This glorious construction was made with over 2 million stone blocks, each weighing from 3 to 30 tons. Actually, the most gigantic ones can be as heavy as 50 tons. The base of the Great Pyramid covers an area of 592,000 square feet, and each of its sides is about 218,000 square feet in size. The outer layer of the pyramid consists of 144,000 polished casing stones that are around 8 feet thick and weigh no less than 15 tons each. Experts guess that it probably took over 20 years to build this monumental structure, and that's only if 20,000 workers arrived at the building site every day. So, do you really think that all this time, effort, and manpower was spent just to create a tomb, however glorified it might be? Well, modern historians have a different idea. They now believe that the Pyramid of Giza was built to serve as a power plant. That's right. And it makes sense, too. The Great Pyramid is vastly unlike any traditional tomb. There's no wall art, intricate coffins, flashy artifacts, or sealed doors. Not to mention, it's missing the most important thing that any tomb should have. A mummy. Or even a daddy. And if you let go of the stereotype that ancient civilizations were less developed than we are today, a question arises. Could the ancient Egyptians have had technologies as advanced as the modern ones? What if their knowledge was lost only to be rediscovered centuries later? What people know for sure is that, thanks to Nikola Tesla and Thomas Edison, electricity turned into a widespread commodity at the end of the 19th century. But later, in 1934, an unexpected archaeological finding in Iraq proved that these, albeit great men, weren't the first to bring electricity to humankind. The discovery I'm talking about is known as the Baghdad Battery, or Parthian Battery. Now, this thing didn't have anything in common with modern batteries. It consisted of three parts: a ceramic pot, a copper tube, and an iron rod. When liquid acid was poured into this device, the resulting reaction produced an electric charge. Oh, and according to researchers, this battery was used over 2,000 years ago. This finding could explain the mystery of the elaborate gold plating that covers many ancient artifacts. You see, such plating can only be created with the use of electric power. As for the Great Pyramid, it's full of inexplicable mysteries itself. First of all, hidden inside, there are numerous tunnels leading deep underground. These areas still remain unexplored, but is that missing mummy hanging out in there somewhere? Perhaps, but I doubt it. Also, the Great Pyramid of Giza was once covered with amazingly polished limestone. These casing stones were created in such a smooth manner that their surface was absolutely flat. As a result, the structure could reflect the rays of the sun pretty much like a mirror. An additional bonus was flawless insulation inside the pyramid. Interestingly enough, the Egyptians also used a special material, dolomite, on the inner sides of the pyramid. This mineral is known to multiply electrical conductivity. Not to mention, the underground tunnels and passageways that run throughout the inside of the pyramid are lined with somewhat radioactive granite. This granite contains a lot of metal and quartz crystals, both of which are great conductors of piezoelectricity. This type of electricity results from putting pressure on quartz. The granite used in the Great Pyramid would have ionized the air inside, creating a particular chemical reaction, which, in turn, increased the conductivity. All of these conditions provided the perfect opportunity for large electrical currents to appear. But hold on now, that's not all. I haven't even told you about the mortar yet. To build the Great Pyramid and keep those ginormous stones together, the ancient Egyptians needed more than 500,000 tons of this substance. Modern technology still can't recreate the gypsum-based mortar that was used during the construction of the pyramids. This type of gypsum withstands huge amounts of pressure. So, this may sound bizarre, but the mortar holding them together is, in fact, stronger than the blocks of the pyramid themselves. Oh, and we can't forget about the sarcophagi that have been found inside the pyramid. For many years, researchers believed that these gigantic granite boxes were basically elaborate coffins for pharaohs. But these things were huge. They weighed at least 10 tons. One sarcophagus was so incredibly heavy that it was absolutely impossible to carry it through the narrow entrances and tunnels. It can only mean one thing. Somebody measured wrong? No. It means that these boxes were originally built into the insides of the pyramid. The fact that their surface is absolutely flat, with variations within 10 thousandths of an inch, only backs up that claim. Plus, these coffins were just way too big for human beings, even if they were great and powerful pharaohs. In 1993, an inaccessible secret room was uncovered beneath the Great Pyramid. This room, which seemed to be deliberately concealed, was dubbed the Queen's Chamber. In 2011, thanks to more developed technologies, it became possible to explore the room with the help of a remote camera. What do you think they caught a glimpse of? The mummy of a queen? The solidly sealed secret chamber contained copper wire. Yep, and carefully crafted at that. There was also something resembling instructions, accompanied by wiring diagrams drawn on the floor. So, if the conditions were right, keeping copper pieces in a windowless sealed room could result in a powerful release of electromagnetic energy. Granite, limestone, dolomite, copper. All materials that are especially efficient at conducting electricity. But it must be some sort of coincidence, right? Maybe those were just the only materials they had around when they were building the pyramids. Well, what do you think about the fact that most of the pyramids were built on top of perfect power generators, underground rivers? It's a proven fact that thousands of years ago, the Nile passed right through the area where the Great Pyramid stands. And if the water was indeed the source of power, the picture keeps getting clearer and clearer. You see, there's this thing called capillary action, or the capillary effect. It's the ability of water, or any other liquid for that matter, to flow upward into super narrow spaces, completely ignoring the pull of gravity. That being said, water from the river could technically slide up the pyramid's limestone surface and probably even reach the top. Its movement would cause vibration strong enough for the quartz inside the pyramid to create piezoelectricity. Remember, it's that type of electricity created by putting stress or pressure on quartz. This would generate a lot of electromagnetic energy that would move up all the way to the top of the pyramid. And at the top of the Great Pyramid of Giza, there used to be a capstone made entirely of gold. It forwarded a path to transfer negative ions, those are atoms with an electrical charge, to the ionosphere, the layer of the Earth's atmosphere that contains a ton of said atoms. And that's how an electric current of immense power was produced. Okay, great, but what was it used for? Well, ancient Egyptians weren't exactly using electric toothbrushes or anything. Some recent carvings depicting Egyptians carrying something that looks eerily similar to a light bulb. Hey, just check out the carvings in the Hathor Temple. It shows people holding what appears to be a giant light bulb with a twisted wire inside that runs down into a cord and attaches to a box that must be the receiver. Looks like modern electrical technologies to me. Another weird thing you can see in such carvings is what clearly looks like a wireless antenna. Perhaps the ancient Egyptians used wireless technology for communication purposes. They very well could have used electricity at weaving plants to manufacture yarn. What scientists know for sure is that the electromagnetic measurements taken around the Great Pyramid are similar to those taken during a lightning storm. If you climb up to the top of the pyramid holding a bottle covered in a wet cloth, you'd see sparks coming from the bottle. Hey, stay up there too long, and you might even see sparks coming from you. Ouch! Of course, there are still so many questions to be answered, and that's why research continues. But the power plant theory perfectly explains some bizarre phenomena that has been bothering historians and researchers for decades. It is just a theory, though. So, what do you think? Do you believe that pyramids could be something absolutely different from what we took them for? Tell us your theories in the comments below. And if you love mysteries and secrets as much as we do, hit the like button and stay with us on the bright side of life.
Okay, enough with the studying. There's something I want to show you.
What are these things?
Tesla coils. I was using them to generate something called plasma. The thing is, I got so fixated on the technical aspects of it, I almost didn't notice something kind of beautiful. I think you'd better step into my cage.
Okay, it's definitely the first time anyone has said that to me.
I'm not surprised. Just hold on to this bar, please. Hold both hands. Yep. Okay. Okay, hold on tight and enjoy the show. The coils are firing at such a high frequency that sparks literally create sound waves when they fly through the air, which is
nerdy. You were listening. I played this song the other night.
These coils are my life. 2 years I'm down here working with them, and they're making their own music, and it was lost on me, and I was never able to appreciate it until I met you. I heard you talking about music on your radio show, and I'm sappy. So, do you want to meet up later, 8 o'clock, in my lab?
Yeah, it'd be great.
With me?
With you, yes.
Making sure.
I gotta yoga.
Yeah, I gotta go to the bathroom.
So, what do we really know about electricity? That's a good question, eh? You're listening to the Mad Science Show at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have access to not one but four separate chat rooms. Whew, got to get a breath on that one. As well as if you scroll down underneath the chat rooms over there, you can click on the link for People for People Radio Network and go over there and join even another chat room and visit with those wonderful people. So, we got this thing called electricity that we all use. We all know how to turn on the light switch, and we all know, dangers sometimes. Said hi to everybody in there. Hi, neutrons, protons, and electrons over there. People for People Radio. Hi, hello to everybody in the chat rooms everywhere. So, anyway, let me see if I can get my brain functioning again. But either way, nature has been using electricity since the dawn of time, pretty much. You go back and listen to the science, some people think that the primordial soup might have got hit by electricity and sort of energized everything, got everything going, you know, in the mix. Well, you know, it's kind of like that, give my creation life from young Frankenstein. Anyway, we're not trying to build Frankenstein or anything. We're just trying to figure out what we do know and what we don't know about electricity. Electricity, static electricity, piezoelectricity, you know, any types, AC or DC electricity, all of it's the same exact energy. But how we use it is a little bit different. In that last little clip right there where the guy was actually turning the high frequency into sound waves into the room, basically, for the most part, we don't know nothing about electricity outside of just a simple, you know, that we can use it to get work done, that we can produce magnetic fields, but do we actually really know what electricity really is? And we know through observation and physics on different reactions that we can get with electricity. And we always have you know, people out there trying to find a cheaper, more efficient way of using electricity, not excluding myself. There's been many researchers throughout history who have tried to do many things to try to get hydrogen technology on the market and all that kind of stuff. But for, you know, obvious reasons, there's certain individuals out there wouldn't want that kind of information to come to the forefront, because if you didn't have to pay for it, well, then you know, ain't nobody gonna make no money. At least the greedy ain't gonna make no money. So, you know, you got stories about Ben Franklin, you got stories about all these different researchers in the past. I posted a link down there, which I really, you know, it Nikola Tesla was a brilliant inventor. But you got people out there that really mock and ridicule him all the way, you know, basically past the grave. And this one particular video down here starts off talking about different things. He's basically making fun of everything throughout the entire deal. But nonetheless, at the end, he starts mocking, you know, Nikola Tesla. There's a lot of researchers out there that go through a lot of hassle just to try to do, you know, things like share new discoveries with everybody so that, you know, we can actually make our planet more efficient and, you know, more apt to be friendly to nature, if you understand what I'm trying to say. So, you got lightning all day long, every day. The physics of what's going on out there is pretty impressive. And we've been able to learn from what nature done, and if we really paid attention, and we'd actually understand the whole workings, you know, like the gears in the machine kind of thing. And there are actually eels out there that produce electricity. There are bugs out there that produce light as they fly, you know. Some people call them fireflies, some people call them lightning bugs. So all the way through everything that you see, including, you know, different materials rubbing up against each other, producing a static charge, producing electricity. All man has ever done is mimic a few of the effects of what electricity actually does. And once we got into different frequency ranges, we were able to even do a couple cool, more cool things out there. We was able to, you know, transfer energy wirelessly. And actually, if we would have went Tesla's route, we probably wouldn't be talking about this right now. We'd be talking about wireless energy transfer, you know. We got cell phones. We got all kinds of different communication devices that, you know, Wi-Fi routers and, you know, two-way radios to talk to each other and all that kind of stuff. And so all of this is basically using electricity and the physics of, sending what we call magnetic waves out and doing all the, cool stuff that we enjoy, watching TV and talking to each other and all that kind of stuff. And then you got, people out there with theories trying to explain it, and some people out there believing that they, have it all figured out, and that we, whoever disagrees with what they say is stupid and all that kind of jazz. Well, I don't agree with that way of thinking. That's, I like the idea that people think outside the box. I just don't like the idea when people, basically start making up crazy stories. Now, it's a good possibility the pyramids could actually be a power plant, because we don't know. History has been basically written by, the elite few out there that supposedly knew the story. But if you actually listened in on the beginning of this show and you heard how the explanation of how those pyramids could have actually been a power plant, might even have been a hydrogen electric power plant, that would tell me that there was something in history that just didn't jive with the way that history was taught in the school. And then you'd have to ask the question, why would they not want you to know the true history of mankind? The only possible explanation for not wanting anybody to know anything would be to basically keep control. If you keep somebody dumbed down, you can't really expect them to ever try to want to go any farther and maybe one day take your job from you. If you're the king, you want to stay the king, that kind of jazz. There's a lot of different alternative researchers out there that didn't fare so well when it come down to trying to share information with people. And anything that came up against the system that had, any kind of possibility of maybe changing the power structure, putting the power in the hands of the people instead of the power in the hands of the few out there in the power industry. And of course, you got apologists everywhere who believe that they know enough about science. Sorry about that. Somebody's trying to call me. You got people out there that believe that they know a lot. Sorry about that. Doggone it. Silence. That's a bad time for a doggone phone call, right? Anyway, you got people out there that believe they know so much that they're apologists for the system. They want to keep the mainstream science, at the top or something like that. Heck, I don't know, man. It's just, in my mind, it's all crazy. I really got distracted by that phone call there. So, I'm going to try to play something real quick here, if I can do this.
Most people would agree you can't get something for nothing. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And yet, we get our oxygen free from the air we breathe. We get sunlight free and water. That used to be free until bottled drinking water came along. But what about energy? We've always had to pay for that, whether it's wood or coal, oil or electricity. It's always been the rule that you can never get back more energy than what you put in the first place. That's a fundamental law of nature. Physicists of the 19th century figured that out with the first law of thermodynamics, the conservation of energy. Maybe so. But science has come a long way since then. And laws? Well, there's never been one that hasn't been broken. At the turn of the last century, Nikola Tesla, the great inventor who gave us alternating current and the Tesla coil, stated,
"Electric power is everywhere present in unlimited quantities. I can drive the world's machinery without the need of coal, oil, gas, or any other fuel. This new power for the driving of the road machinery will be derived from the energy which operates the universe, the cosmic energy.
With over 200 patents to his name, Tesla was well on his way to transmitting electric power without wires when he ran into trouble with J.P. Morgan and the financial interest of 1901. His ambitious Wardenclyffe project to magnify and transmit power to ships at sea and eventually to provide free electricity for the whole world was scuttled by Morgan, leaving Tesla penniless and disillusioned. The wealthy industrialist of the time knew that their vast plans to wire the world with copper from the mines they owned would be upset if they could no longer control the supply and means of delivery. Tesla's beliefs about developing technology in harmony with nature conflicted with the prevailing American attitude at the time that mankind was put on Earth to subdue and dominate nature. Little by little, Tesla was denounced as a crackpot and deleted from the historical record. At the time of his death in 1943, Tesla's truckloads of scientific papers were seized by U.S. government agencies. Who knows what ideas and remarkable devices our world could have inherited.
Okay, I got to pause that for a second. So basically, they deemed him as a crackpot, yet they didn't have no problem seizing his papers and stuff after it was all said and done. So crackpot? I don't think so. Anyway, you know, Tesla believed we could actually plug our machines into the workings of the world and use all the forces of nature to basically provide unlimited power. And once again, you have apologists out there which will say everything under the sun in order to keep the status quo going. I just don't understand people like that. On one hand, you got people out there that claim that we got to save the planet, and we got to do all this stuff. But on the other hand, they want to sit there and tell you that things are not possible. There's all kinds of things that are possible. Matter of fact, I would venture to say that at least 99% of all the people would be amazed at what is truly possible with electricity, what we call electricity. The energy force, I don't know, maybe you might want to call it magic force or whatever. But nature has been using it since the dawn of time. This mysterious force that you know, we call electricity, nature's been doing it. You know, it, like I said earlier, there's bugs out there that have you know, light that shines whenever they're flying around. You know, there's in your brain, there's electricity going on inside your brain. And every single animal, every single creature out there, you know, it's electrical by nature. And even the way that animals follow the magnetic field north or south, they can navigate using this energy force that surrounds us. So what do we really know about electricity? Maybe we don't know as much as we think we do. And so maybe some of those folks out there being wise guys trying to smart mouth everybody who's trying to bring to the forefront, you know, the proof of what we like to call free energy. Some people like to say zero point or over unity or, you know, different terminologies or even perpetual motion kind of things. But those are terminologies that basically get you shut down before you ever even get started. You can't deny free energy. There's no way. If you deny free energy, you might as well deny science. You might as well deny common sense. So, you know, hey, that's cool. Neutrons, protons, electrons. I got the site secured, Chaz. Cool. Let me take a look. It's gone. It says HTTPS. Awesome. All right. So maybe you can get some more people over there. I'll try to figure out how to do that to mine now. But anyway, so all these different terminologies used by a lot of people who are apologists for the systems and, you know, try to tell you all these things aren't possible. You know, it all drives me nutty. It just drives me insane. That's why one of the reasons why I call it mad science. All this, you know, in the atmosphere alone, There's so much energy going on in the atmosphere. Hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, whatever other little trace gases out there. And this thing we call electricity, it actually has the power to ionize this into plasma, you know. It gets the atmosphere stirred up, and there's results of this, you know, like when lightning shoots across there and it's going, you know, faster than speed of light and sound, and causes acoustic waves and what we call thunder, whatever. You know, ice crystals rubbing up against each other up in the atmosphere, and all the other energetic particles flying around. So how people can say there ain't no such thing as free energy, it blows my doors off, because, you know, the earth, they say the earth is 3/4 covered in water. The water is made up of hydrogen and oxygen, and if you know the physics of how to use that water, you can do amazing things with that. You know, you can use it as a fuel. One thing about it is, because water is the most stable molecule on there, you can't even destroy it, you know. They even say so in their own physics. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So what is the big pushback against trying to find solutions for clean, renewable, alternative energy that they keep claiming that they want, but their actions speak otherwise? They don't really do nothing to fix it. You know, it's the status quo. It's easier. It is so much easier just to go over and turn a light on. It's so much easier just to pay the man, you know, whatever money necessary to keep your power on. Well, of course, that makes you at the mercy of, if you ain't got a job, you know, you might not have no power. And so we've been trying to figure out ways by which we can make power more affordable to everybody, by showing them all different types of ways to generate electricity. Everything from repurposing old electric motors to, you know, what nature's already doing and such. There are so many different ways to actually, you know, basically tap into the forces of what we call electricity. We know passing magnets across coils will actually get current flowing and that kind of stuff. And we know that the faster we do this and, you know, change the frequency of it, the higher the voltage becomes and stuff. So we're basically doing what nature's already done. Speeding it up, slowing it down, moving it around. We ain't done nothing that nature hasn't already done. They talk about all these people who discovered electricity. Nature discovered electricity. So, you know, people might get credit for, you know, discovering electricity, when in reality all they did was start paying attention to what nature's already produced. Which is, I guess it's all right now you finally learned something. But where are we going to go from there? How are we going to take this this on even further? Well, yeah, if you listen in on this, a little bit more of this podcast right here, just a couple points I want to make in here.
If only his genius was recognized.
When J.P. Morgan prohibited Tesla from broadcasting electric power overseas with Wardenclyffe Tower, he said, I can't put a meter on it, therefore I won't finance it. That literally changed the course of history, and for the past almost 100 years, we've been suffering under that profit motive.
Of course, one could say that mankind was hardly ready to handle the awesome forces Tesla had glimpsed. The 20th century would bring world wars and technological innovations far more horrific than had ever been witnessed by Western civilization. Even before Tesla, the groundwork that would lead to free energy had been pioneered by great scientists like Michael Faraday and James...
All right, let's pause that before we get to Michael Faraday and them. You know, Tesla also believed that if you give the world free energy, then they wouldn't have to worry about going to war. And everything pretty much, you know, really good inventions that had a lot of power potential seemed to get grasped up by the military. And the military used these... you know, these innate forces of nature to cause destruction, you know, and that's what he was trying to get away from. You know, there's nothing that mankind has ever done that nature hadn't already been able to do. If you think back about that first podcast on there about the pyramids, They might have been ahead of the game as far as figuring out wireless energy. That could have been a wireless energy transfer system where they could send this energy clear across the Earth or whatever. But later on, it got rediscovered when Tesla comes around. So either way, it still puts questions out there what was going on back in the day and what were they using this energy for. Maybe they were just using it like, you know, as in wizardry, you know, to make themselves look like gods to people or whatever. Who knows? It's hard telling. But they might have actually had, you know, machinery and things that we can't even fathom right now. You know, every culture out there talks about there was a flood of some kind, some catastrophic flood around the world, which, I don't know, maybe we're getting ready to have one again, because it's been raining for months around here. Who knows? And there's actually a YouTube channel out there that talks about the mud flood, you know, where there's all kinds of buildings out there that just don't add up, because it looks like somebody built a building on top of a building's foundation and just rebuilt it all. There's a whole lot about history. There's a lot of mysteries out there that, you know, still have a lot of questions to be answered. So, what do we really know? What do we really know about electricity? Let's move on a little bit further here.
Clerk Maxwell. In 1831, Faraday modeled his rotating magnet and disc generator after the Earth, whose rotation around a molten metal core keeps the planet spinning in a self-sustaining magnetic field. His work later resulted in the development of the dynamo. Also called a homopolar or unipolar generator, the Faraday generator provides the basis for much of what is being done today in the electromagnetic approach to free energy, such as with Bruce De Palma's In Machine and Paramahamsa Tiwari's Space Power Generator. Repeated experiments have detected anomalous electrical outputs greater than that used to rotate the disk. The friction and voltage limitations have hampered efficiency, and therefore widespread acceptance. James Clerk Maxwell, best known for his Maxwell's equations, is reputed to have set things straight with his theories of electrical properties in a way that eliminates zero-point energy. But Maxwell's more advanced work allowed for the existence of an ether, a substance finer than air, which since the time of Plato had been considered a scientific fact.
Well, the prevailing belief of the time was that the vacuum was a thin material fluid, the so-called material ether, which we know today is false. The ether is there, but it's not the observable material fluid. Faraday had re-established this notion of lines of force, but he thought the electromagnetic field or the electromagnetic disturbances in the ether, so to speak, was really twanging strings. The strings were under tension, and when you had a disturbance, what you really did was pluck the strings. Now, Maxwell states very clearly that he set about to actually capture exactly what Faraday was doing in his lines of force in the theory, and that's what he did. Maxwell's actual theory is 20 equations and 20 unknowns in quaternions, which is a higher topology algebra. You can do things in that you can't dream of in doing in tensors, and you certainly can't do in vectors, and you certainly can't do with the theory that's taught at our universities. All that remains to be rediscovered and uncovered.
The now famous Michelson-Morley experiment at the turn of the century failed to detect a stationary ether, so classical physics presumed once and for all that it did not exist. The case was closed until quantum mechanics reopened the discussion, allowing for a new interpretation of how matter interacts with a zero-point field.
Most of our scientific community actually believes that empty space, the nature of space itself, is completely empty, devoid of anything. And historically, it's very interesting, because in the 1800s, and even earlier, they believed there was an ether, an all-pervading substance filling up space. And in 1905, when relativity theory became very popular, they said, well, we don't need this ether. It's empty space is empty. Then 20 years later, in 1925, when quantum mechanics comes into play, all of a sudden, a new energy appears in equations of quantum mechanics, and it has to be there to make the equations work, and it has to do with fluctuations of electromagnetic field energy at a very high frequency that interacts with everything. And they call this the zero-point energy, and it turns out that all the elementary particles interact with this energy, and it becomes a potential energy source. That's what we're discovering today.
Well, free energy is basically, in another word for it, is zero-point energy. It's energy that is contained within the vacuum of space, and which is virtually undetectable by any traditional means. In fact, the energy is homogeneous and isotropic, the same everywhere, the same in all directions. And because of that, it's trying to extract it or measure it is sort of like the problem of trying to weigh a beaker of water underneath the surface of the ocean. What do you measure with respect to what? And that's been the physicist's dilemma, and we've gone down one very large cul-de-sac this century. The cul-de-sac mean that there is no such thing as consciousness. There is no such thing as this zero-point field, or this place from which the energy can come. And the answer now appears to be yes, because theoretical physics and a number of experiments in quantum mechanics show very clearly the existence of this all-pervasive electromagnetic field called the zero-point field.
In fact, although skeptics often point to Einstein's theory of relativity, it was Einstein who in 1920 said,
"There are weighty arguments to be adduced in favor of the ether hypothesis. To deny the ether is ultimately to assume that empty space has no physical qualities whatsoever. The fundamental facts of mechanics do not harmonize with this view. According to the general theory of relativity, space is endowed with physical qualities. In this sense, therefore, there exists an ether. According to the general theory of relativity, space without ether is unthinkable."
The term vacuum has been used in several totally different senses. Some engineers use it to mean you just pump out all the air, and that's called a vacuum, and that's vacuum technology. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about empty space-time. We know today, for example, the Lamb shift in quantum mechanics showed that this exchange of energy between the vacuum and the charged particles is in fact real and generates real effects. And you can measure it, and he was given the Nobel Prize, Lamb was, for doing that kind of measurement and showing it in the physics literature. So we know it's real. Experimentally it's detected. The Casimir shift, for example, shows clearly that it's there, and it does generate energetic effects in your actual materials. It turns out that in the modern view, the modern quantum mechanical view, if you apply that knowledge that's been gained there, what you find is that the vacuum is fiercely active. It's a fierce energy flux and going all directions at all times. The energy density of that, as estimated by various physicists, is extremely high. For example, in one cubic centimeter, if you could take the raw energy in that cubic centimeter and condense it into mass divided by c squared, you would have more observable mass result from that than our largest telescope can see in the observable universe and all the stars and planets today. And so the energy that's there is extremely dense and extremely fierce. This drives everything that we call physical reality from the quantum level right on up to the observed level and the observed world that we live in. Everything is energetically driven by the vacuum.
So, if everything's energy, everything around there is energy, there's energy in you. You know, I think it was Redempty in there said, electricity is like water. It cannot be created or destroyed. It recycles both change form with heat. Yeah, so every time you use any type of energy, you generate heat. And when you use heat, you can actually generate energy, you know, generate electricity with heat. There's so many different things that we have learned throughout these years. And by all these other alternative energy researchers doing different types of experiments, we've learned a lot of things. You know, it's not about trying to defy the laws of physics. It's about using those laws of physics to our advantage to get work done. It's as simple as that. But the long and the short of it all is that nature's already been doing everything we've been doing. Nature produces plasma. You know, some people like to call it like the aurora borealis or the northern lights or whatever. You know, when that energy, you know, is the lightning bolts or the magnetic fields lines or whatever, all this stuff is interacting with each other. That's all we're doing on a smaller scale. And so there ain't no reason why we couldn't achieve great efficiencies, with the exception of, you know, the hindrance to whatever resources that we need in order to build, you know, machines to prove what it is that we're talking about. You know, the closer you get to some, basically what somebody would call a free energy device or whatever, the more heat actually seems to come down on you from, you know, even, like I said earlier, the apologist for science, you know, the people who believe that they know it all, the ones that want to get out there and curse you up and down the storm, telling you you're stupid and you don't know this or whatever, you know. And I just don't get it. I don't understand why it is that governments of the world, governments want knowledge because knowledge is power, and they recognize that knowledge keeps them in power. And so they got a lot of cool toys that they don't tell the general public about. They got a lot of powerful weapons that they use. And all these big nations out there, you know, we all think about just atomic bombs or nuclear bombs or whatever, but that don't even scratch the surface of, you know, energy weapons that basically Tesla could have put, you know, the diagrams together to give them something to research. You know, there's all kinds of hidden research facilities all over in the government. You know, and they don't tell everybody. There's all kinds of patents that come out of organizations like NASA or whatever. Why is the average Joe still having trouble with this? You know, the education system, far as I'm concerned, is only limited to what you need to know. It's on a need-to-know basis, and you're all compartmentalized away from, you know, the actual truth of the matter. When somebody like myself gets out here and starts talking about things that don't jive with the school book, then suddenly, you know, I'm stupid. You know, I don't know what I'm talking about. Which is really frustrating. You know, I spent a lifetime studying everything about science. I love science, you know, because I love to know how things work. But I'm also smart enough to recognize that nature's already shown us how everything works. All we got to do is mimic those forces. You know, I mentioned earlier lightning bugs. You know, what actually keeps that light on in the lightning bug? You know, there's science out there that'll tell you about that. So if you're really interested, you can go Google it. Could be chemical, could be electrical, could be a combination of both. But nonetheless, the schools have pretty much dropped the ball. They only tell you what, you know, the approved message is, the approved education is. And then you move from that, you know, grade school up to high school, and the indoctrination just gets worse. And by the time you come out of college, you just wasted all this life of trying to, you know, learn things. You know, that education, what's it done? What's it done for the world? You got all these college-educated people. The best of the best, the most brilliant minds, get snatched up by the system. And the ones that don't want to comply, well, you know what happens to them. Of course, that makes it a conspiracy, right? Ain't no such thing as zero point. There ain't no such thing as over-unity. Ain't no such thing as perpetual motion. There ain't no such thing as free energy. That's what they tell you all the doggone time. But nature's been doing what nature does under their deal for millions, if not billions, of years. This is what they say. How many years does it take for something to run under its own system that you can actually call it perpetual motion or free energy, for that matter? I'm sure if there were cavemen back in the day, I'm sure they still saw lightning. I'm sure they still felt the wind and the heat and all the different forces of nature. I'm sure that they, saw what kind of destruction could come about with water, you know. We got pumps out there that can take water and cut through steel. That's pretty impressive. You know, positive displacement pumps that just force the pressure through there. Sometimes they add materials to it, little pieces of grit that will help the process of cutting through there, but there are some pumps out there that don't. They for cutting through softer materials. We know that water has the power to erode. You put it under that kind of pressure. So everything that water does, electricity does. basically, you can explain it both hand in hand exactly. All the pressures and current flows of how water functions, and that you can store water, and depending on, you know, how high you store it up in the air, you can use the force of what we call gravity to, you know, force downward pressure. So, you know, the apologists out there, they'll say everything they can to say, well, you know, there's losses in every system, and so you can't have, you know, something for nothing. It didn't cost you anything to get that static electricity out of the air. You know, rubbing two different materials together, so you put the energy to rubbing the materials, but you still produced an effect that we call electricity. So, with what I've been trying to show everybody about high voltage is that you can move this voltage around, because voltage is pressure. And pressure is what you need to get work done. It's the current, too much current, too much energy going to any system that causes it to get hot. And so once you figure all this kind of stuff out, you got all of the knowledge of how the machine actually functions, then you can start to engineer new machines that use these anomalies, these effects, more efficiently. Let's move forward a little bit in this podcast here for a second.
The Sea of Energy in Which the Earth Floats was a revolutionary book written by T. Henry Morey, an electrical engineer and Tesla enthusiast, who in the early 20s began working on a device he claimed intercepted radio from outer space. His solid-state detector, the Morey valve, was designed with a complex series.
And that it is time that world governments officially acknowledge
high-voltage capacitors and transformers hooked up to an antenna and a ground wire. By stimulating the existing oscillations of space energy, his radiant energy device ran for days, putting out 50 kilowatts of electricity. His public demonstrations attracted newspaper coverage and scientists from Bell Laboratories and the Department of Agriculture's Rural Electrification Administration. Although no one could find evidence of fraud, neither could anyone explain how the radiant energy device worked. During the 30s, he developed semiconductors and transistors that were far ahead of their time. Unfortunately, as all too many inventors have suffered, when he refused to sell out to powerful interests, Morey and his family were threatened, shot at, and the laboratory ransacked. Ignored by the U.S. Patent Office, Morey quietly stopped public disclosure of the device after it was destroyed by his assistant, Felix Frenchard, a communist sympathizer who was frustrated. Morey declined his repeated offers to take that technology to Russia. Today, Morey's sons, John and Richard, continue to pursue their father's dream. In Europe.
So, there's another example. Another small example. Every time somebody gets close, if they don't want to sell out, then the forces of darkness, so to speak, move in and start tearing stuff up. So, for some reason, people want to discourage people away from what it is that they claim they say they need. We need clean, renewable, alternative energy. I've been hearing this for so doggone long, it's ridiculous. And yet, you still don't see it. You still don't see the cooperation between researchers. First off, you know, there's a lot of researchers that, you know, don't really have funding. And there's a lot of researchers that would really like to get rich. So they figure if they can invent this device, they can sell it and make a lot of money. But the system's already excluded people from making money because of so-called continuity of government. What's that other thing they talk about? It becomes a security risk, you know, especially when your dollar is backed by petrol instead of gold, you know, the petrodollar. You know, it's backed by oil. And so we use markets to speculate the price of oil going up and down, and that affects inflation. But there's there's people out there that have, you know, there's one video out there that says, man solves Tesla's secret to amplifying power nearly 5,000%. That would sound like over unity. And of course, when you're out there looking on YouTube, you're going to find all kinds of craziness, like I said a million times on here, that there's people out there that fake free energy devices in order to muddy up the water. But for some reason, the system allows them to continue to do that, when that basically, if somebody looks up free energy, you know, you've already got a bad reputation before you ever even present what it is that you're trying to share with the world. There's all kinds of documentaries out there on electricity. There's all kinds of documentaries out there about how capacitors work, how electric motors work. And if you sit there and you listen to these things and you think about them mechanically of what's actually occurring in these systems, you can find other uses and other purposes for these anomalies, these effects that you get. Basically, it ain't no different than us going up there, putting our hand in a pool of water and doing this repeatedly, and creating, you know, a wave that amplifies that, you know, initial deal. You keep doing it over and over. You know, to say Tesla invented an earthquake machine, which basically was, you know, doing the same exact thing. It was vibrating something or hitting it over and over and over again. So we've understood how to use the forces of energy to get these effects, and then we understood later on how to take some of these effects and make electric motors. And, you know, nowadays we're looking at electric cars, but still, at the same sense, we're never taking it as far as where we could be taking it. That's where the frustration comes in. You know, there are, like I said, tons and tons of researchers out there. Matter of fact, speaking on that point, if you go on to the superchat.html and you click on up above the chat rooms, Stephen's resource page, he's taking a lot of time to compile tons and tons of links to these researchers. And even if you go back into the chat room, you can go back to the chat and you can find all the videos that we posted out here. Links to different podcasts and such. There's tons of podcasts on Mad Science. There's tons of podcasts on Knights of the Round Table. So the information's been put out there. And if you listen to all this information with an open mind and a kind of a mechanical look at everything on how these things are functioning, these little anomalies that I show people, like I took a hard drive, a computer hard drive, and granted, I used a Dremel to speed this thing up to like 25,000 to 50,000 RPMs, but mechanically, if you realize what is going on inside that hard drive, there ain't very much copper wire inside that hard drive. There's a little weak magnet inside that hard drive. But by spinning that thing up to over 50,000 RPMs, I was able to light up a whole strand of, you know, LEDs that normally takes 120 volts out of the wall outlet in order to run this LED lighting strip, which told me that there's something else going on out there. You'll need tons and tons of copper wire to get that effect of that high voltage. And so with that said, you know, if you take that concept and maybe the concept of Tesla's turbine, the Tesla turbine, you know, spinning, you know, two flat discs up by the pressure that's in between there, you can get crazy RPMs and you can create crazy voltages. Then you need to be able to say, well, what can I do with that energy now that I've got all this high voltage? What can I do with it? Well, that's the easy part, because we've got tons of different types of capacitors for multiple different purposes, and you can use this capacitor technology and all the physics of capacitance to store that energy, and you can build that energy up, you know, and you can release that energy whenever you want to release it. So we have you know, transistor circuits that we can build these days, like the Slarek-Sider circuit, you know, to build basically the equivalents of a Tesla coil, where you're taking energy and you're, you know, ramping it up even higher. And then by understanding how the Tesla coil actually functions and you know, when those fields are expanding and collapsing, we can make multiple layer capacitors and multiple layer primaries and secondary coils that starts off a domino effect and ramps that voltage way up there. That high voltage can be moved around easily because it doesn't meet the resistance that the actual current would have met. When the current starts to flow, then you start getting a lot of heat generated, and that heat is the enemy of the materials that you use in order to do things. You know, the transistors, like a TIP 42C transistor, I think it's an NPN transistor, or the TIP 31C, either one of those, in all of them, you know, they're made out of silicone and different materials that, they have a thermal breakdown point on there. But you could actually take and run multiples of these transistors in parallel with each other to absorb any feedback that might come back and cause the doggone things to get hot, or even the current that you're using to drive it to begin with. So we can actually regulate that temperature, and we can actually capture whatever waste energy would have been by that heat and move that heat energy somewhere else. So it ain't like we don't have the technology available to make really super fast acting switches that will, rapidly change the magnetic field, by pulsing this energy and get the maximum amount of power out of, the minimum amount of input. So if you do this, everything from static electricity, there's enough energy in static electricity to be able to store rapidly into different types of capacitor technology, and when that capacitor gets fully loaded enough to actually trip the transistors, we got tiny little transistors, we got tiny little capacitors, we could actually use what would have otherwise not been powerful enough to do anything to ramp that voltage up even more and then store that. So you have a multi-stage circuit that's taking what would have been an insignificant voltage in the millivolt range and ramping it up until you get to the point where it's usable energy again. So even pulling radio waves out of the air, like a lot of these different things, even that one where I told you I spun the computer hard drive up with a Dremel. Of course, I got comments in there. Well, that's not free energy because you used a lot of power to run that Dremel. Well, they didn't get the point of what it was that I was trying to show them, which was the fact that there's very little copper wire in those motors and a very weak magnet inside, a ring magnet inside that doggone hard drive. But yet it was able to, just that little bit of material, at the right RPMs, was able to push out a lot of voltage. So making high voltage is ridiculously easy. We got Wimshurst, we got the Van de Graaff, we got the Lord Kelvin generator, the Hauksbee device, all these different types of ways to, make static electricity. And if you use energy in a completely different fashion than you normally did, right now the way that we use electricity is counterproductive to what we want to do, because not only does it cause things to get hot, but every time you put a load on any one of these machines, any one of these generators, they feed back on themselves and they slow the system down. And so this is where all the people come in here, aha, we got you, there's no way you can do it, because the more you put on there, the slower it goes, and eventually it's going to stop. Alright, well, if you took that energy that you want off of that system without putting that system under a load, which is really ridiculously simple to do so, you ramp that voltage up, you move it over to a power storage bank, such as a capacitor bank, that you could then in turn bleed over into whatever types of battery technology that you want to use that's the best. Robert Murray Smith over there is working on graphene technology for batteries. Getting really good, efficient batteries that are charged faster and long and last longer. So it's moving that energy where you want it. That's the only thing. All we're doing is speeding it up and slowing it down. But nonetheless, if you got a wind generator out there and you're using the wind generator in its conventional form, you got some sort of regulator that will, only allow so much power to go to the battery, but that regulator is a hindrance because of the way that it actually tries to change that energy to charge those batteries. Once that connection's made, all that energy makes a loop right back into the same generator you're trying to pull power from, and it slows it down. And so by that, it makes it less efficient. But if you take that energy that you want from that and constantly allow that generator to free flow, and you put that voltage to something else, into a different deal without, sending that power back to the generator. See, if you got things like a rectifier connected to it, then that means that rectifier will only allow that electricity to go in one direction. So you'll have change it from AC current to DC current. Now, if you can keep that energy from going back to that generator, then that generator will not bog down. And even if it does to some extent, but not nearly what it would be if you run it in the conventional sense, then you would have a really efficient way to move power from one place to the next. So the wind's blowing this fan blade up there, and it's producing high voltage that's in turn, charging up your capacitor banks, and then later on down the line you use that you could actually use a switching system that where you would never have your load directly connected to the system. It's basically when it gets fully charged up, it'll trip a relay and shift that over, that power over, and dump that power into another system without ever allowing it to hook a direct load to that generator, keeping that generator from ever bogging down because it's under a load. So let's move a little bit farther in this deal right here.
Victor Schauberger's vortex experiments during the 1930s resulted in an advanced understanding of how the spiraling motions inherent in all natural systems reverse the effects of entropy. By studying the properties of inwardly spiraling water, he created an implosion generator that concentrated electrical charge.
Victor Schauberger is one of my heroes who talked about a possible science based on the inward motion rather than the let's explode everything, break it up and study the atom by breaking it up into little pieces. Let's study the atom by looking at how it wants to move naturally in a spiraling motion. And the same with everywhere you look in nature.
Schauberger's ideas became widely known before World War II when he was coerced to work for the Nazis on exotic discs that resembled flying saucers, as well as his energy generator. In 1958, he traveled to the United States, where he was told he could manufacture his devices. But he was duped into signing over all of his rights, and none of his inventions were ever developed. Returning to Austria, he died a bitter and broken man. Visionary philosopher, artist, and scientist Walter Russell's contributions to the understanding of energy are significant, even though ignored by mainstream academia. Russell's revised periodical table of the elements, based on a spiral, predicted many unknown elements and isotopes like plutonium and deuterium. His cosmological theories about the mystical nature of reality challenged physicists to think in terms of energy, light, and matter as one substance.
There's electricity in the air. It's a common expression and one that's true. Take a comb, run it through your hair on a dry day, and you can get a static shock. Sure, it's electricity, all right, but could it also be tapped to produce sufficient energy we could all use?
Benjamin Franklin is credited as being the inventor of the electrostatic motor back in the 1700s, but its power output was modest. The Wimhurst electrostatic generator is a high-voltage mechanism developed in the 1800s, which can be hand or self-started and will produce dramatic sparking while charging Leyden jars. Today, it's used in teaching about electricity, but its practical applications are considered inconsequential. A high-tech variation of the Wenzhurst device is the Testatica, or Swiss ML converter. Developed by Paul Baumann of the Maternita community in Switzerland during the 70s, this free energy device is a marvel that has been in operation for more than 20 years, supplying electricity to the small, self-sufficient Christian community. Many technical experts have come away stumped by its excess output. However, because the community feels that the majority of mankind is not ready to be responsible for such unlimited energy, they're keeping the technology under wraps until such time the world is spiritually prepared. Other researchers, like Dr. Oleg Jefimenko, continue to pursue real-world applications for harnessing the electrostatic motor.
His accomplishment, I view the best, is that he used a specific type of electret, which is a waxy substance which holds charge, and it's like a, in many ways, a magnet, electrical analog of a magnet. And he's achieved a 0.1 horsepower motor, which is a small device. So, and this runs continually on atmospheric electricity.
Like the homopolar generator, the electrostatic motor is based on the dynamics of our Earth environment. As with wind and solar power, they offer real, sustainable alternatives that, with only modest gains in efficiency, could contribute to the replacement of our current dependence on fossil fuels. Are we clever enough to learn from the clues our planet is providing? Upon the foundation of innovative thinkers and inventors like Tesla and Morley, the modern age of free energy research began. In the 1950s, as waves of flying saucer sightings occurred throughout the United States and while an infant space program was trying to catch up with the Russians' launch of Sputnik, a man named T. Townsend Brown was busy on experiments that defied conventional understanding about electricity, gravitation, and propulsion. Along with Drs. Paul Byfield and Agnew Bonson, Brown took high voltage to the next extreme. In this rare home movie, the earliest experiments in electrogravitics are recorded. By using high voltages over 20,000 and up to 200,000 volts, Brown discovered that highly charged capacitors would exhibit a noticeable thrust in one direction. Although awarded a patent for his electrokinetic generator, no one has ever reproduced his experiment until recently. Larry Davenport, shown here demonstrating his replication of Brown's electrokinetic apparatus, explains.
When I first began to read Brown's stuff, I didn't quite understand the difference between the ion wind devices, which there's a lot of them out there, and some of them are very efficient as far as producing ion wind, and his particular apparatus. I finally decided to do Brown's work in 1994. I looked at his device. I'd tried several different things and they hadn't worked. And I thought, well, Brown is supposed to be the pioneer of this. Or so the people that make the claims and get the patents, they always refer to his name. So I thought, I'll go back and I'll try to do this. Getting it balanced was real important.
His method of propulsion specifically was using the charge separation, high voltage charge separation in a vehicle. He found that circular craft were better for that application than wing craft. However, recently we found through Dr. Paula Violette's research that the B-2 bomber actually seems to qualify as an electrogravitic craft. The military has admitted that it electrically charges the forward leading edge of the wings. There's also a very high dielectric being used. Depleted uranium is used on the forward edge of the wings. And whether or not there are other applications for that technology in that design, we're recognizing that because the exhaust gas is also negatively ionized, that all of a sudden we have the high voltage charge separation that's necessary to provide an extra propulsive force, especially at high velocities. So electrogravity in that aspect is a very simple process, but does provide a good amount of force for a very small amount of energy input.
As with many other promising inventions developed during the Cold War years, the National Secrecy Act prevented scientists like T. Townsend Brown from commercializing or even publicizing any technology which could potentially be interpreted as having a military application.
See that right there? Different technologies available out there would have been available. They got that Secrecy Act thing going on there. That's not the only hindrance that you would have. But if you think about physics and everything that we've explained, you know, how lightning is generated, you know, when you're flying an airplane through the clouds, and you know, how static electricity could be built up, and you could actually take in, bring in, you know, when you talk about hydrogen technology, the atmosphere is hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. Could you then essentially build an ion drive engine or even a hydrogen propulsion system that, as you were flying through the deal, that at the very least, like the ramjet system, would bring all this hydrogen and oxygen in there, and using this static buildup, this charge that was actually built up, to use that high voltage to turn it into the plasma state, or even separate the hydrogen and oxygen, and then use that force as it's shoved out the back, propelling you forward. I'm sure these folks out there in, you know, NASA and the military, and even in some private industries, I'm sure they're already aware of all this kind of, you know, physics and science. What we're talking about isn't nothing. It's not space age. It's not even rocket science. It's basic science. You know, if you understand a simple of electrolysis of what's going on there, you're using, you know, brute force to try to separate hydrogen and oxygen. However, there's an easier method to do it that Stan Myers came up with back in the 70s, you know, using radio waves. And even people rediscovering after Stan Myers did it, talking about how they would sell out to the oil industries this information so that you never know about it. But, and they get, you know, they get money. Most of the folks that buck the system, though, like I said, they don't fare so well. And there's a video that I watched just yesterday on YouTube, where a guy was actually wanting to see whether or not crude oil would actually run an internal combustion engine that's, you know, not even refined. And he took two different types of crude oil, one called sweet and one called sour crude oil, sweet crude and sour crude, which the only difference between the two is, you know, a few chemicals that might be in the one that ain't in the other, but it's also the viscosity, the thickness of the oil. And so with the sweet crude, the man actually had to dilute the sweet crude down a little bit with gasoline, but nonetheless, both of them ran. The sour crude actually ran the engine, you know, and it smoked a little bit to start, but after it got running, it didn't smoke anymore. And so he was actually able to use basically just crude oil, non-refined oil, in an internal combustion engine, which he used the Briggs & Stratton engine to do that. If I can find that link, I'll post it for you. There it is right there. Let me see if I can do this without the sound here. I got to mute it real quick. There we go. I'll post this in all the different chat rooms, and you can watch it for yourself what I'm talking about. But it's just these folks that go out there and they try things just to see if they work. You know, this is what I'm talking about. These are just, you know, average Joes out there. They're not necessarily you know, what they would call scientists or anything like that, but they try things. And so when they do that, it gives us more information of a you know, different anomalies that we can, you know, find to be useful. Let me see if I can transfer this over. I got to do that once again because I'm putting it on the wrong computer. Sorry about that. But we'll get it. Do do do. Sorry about that. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and post this link over there to People for People Radio as well. I got to stop it before it starts again, which I don't think I'm going to be able to make it in time. Pause. Okay, there we go. Got to pop up the video and pause it real quick so that it don't go over the radio show. So that I'm not going to make no difference if it does, but anyway, I just want to share this video because he uses these two versions of crude oil and is actually able to run an engine with it. And he actually takes the engine apart and shows you inside the engine of, you know, how they affect the inside of that deal. Not much different than actually running gasoline through. There's also this YouTuber here as well. He does all kinds of different things to see if engines will run on different types of materials and, you know, vaporized gas and stuff like that. I didn't really like his vaporized gas one because I think that it didn't really go as far as it could have. But you can give to his credit, though, these engines are engineered a specific way. They got specific jet sizes and all that, and they're timed out to have different, you know, types of fuel, you know, in different types or whatever. But back to the deal there. What do we really know about electricity? Well, we know a lot more than is actually led on to, but we don't really know in the long term what electricity really is. We just know the effects of what we're doing. You know, nature, like I said, nature's been doing this for, according to science, millions of billions of years. Who knows? None of us know, and those who claim that they know, they're fooling themselves, because the system only tells you what the system wants you to know. That's it, plain and simple. Just like all these technologies, they get hindered because, you know, if it could be turned into a weapon, of course they don't want another country getting this weapon before they get it. So they're running around grabbing up all these different deals here. Well, if y'all could get your act together flat out, we'd get these information, you know, out there, the whole world would have it, and then it don't matter. You know? Maybe there were past societies that found out the secrets of energy, and they basically destroyed themselves, and that's what they're trying to hide from us, that we actually could do all these things, but we don't do all these things because we can't trust humanity with this information because they might destroy each other. You know, like Tesla's death ray deal that they talk about. You know, if there was a death ray out there, which I can fully understand the physics of how one would actually function, and I know that it is, you know, science fact instead of science fiction, that you can take radio waves and you know, hurt somebody. You know, to this very day, we have all kinds of technologies that we don't really utilize to their full potential. But what we could do with them, and what we should be doing with them, is trying to take care of each other. But what we do with them is kind of contrary to what we're talking about. There's, you know, ways that we could actually clean the water up for people in places that water's gotten messed up, and, you know, we could help nature speed up by using the processes nature already uses to get things done. But all these energy researchers, including myself, have met brick walls. You know, whether it be funding purposes or resources of any type, it's really hard to try to get a message out. Now, luckily, People for People's figured out the HTTPS thing, so they'll probably be able to get a lot more traffic there now. That's awesome, because people won't be afraid to go there. And I'm going to try to work that out for Shaziz Radio. I actually have access to the certificate, but I can't use it, because if I do, then I can't use the types of chat rooms that I got. These Chatango chat rooms are free. Now, I can't afford to go out and buy a really fancy chat room, otherwise we'd have a fancy chat room. But these things have served their purpose for many years. But either way, we're able to share information, and certain codes out there, like these chat rooms right here, if you notice, there ain't no Google ads on that particular page, because Google will shut you down and kick you out of the AdSense program because they think you're trying to cheat because these chat rooms auto-refresh, so you can't have Google Ads on any page with auto-refresh, which is, you know, if you want to try to make some money on your website, you know, you can't advertise where your chat room's at, if you understand what I'm saying. But other places out there, there are Google Ads on ShazizRadio.com, even Shaziz.com and Shaziz.net, and even YouTube. YouTube, maybe you might make $5 or $6 or $7 or $8 every 2 or 3 months or something like that after the adpocalypse on YouTube. But it don't really generate enough money to actually, you know, provide for the resources in order to be able to make cool machines that you want to share with the world. So it's a slow process to get anything done around here. So, you know, it is what it is. And I wish I could actually move a lot faster than what I do when I'm building things. I haven't made videos for a while because I've been frustrated with YouTube and all the deals. I haven't done a lot of videos. I'm probably going to do one pretty soon. But it kills your motivation when you're getting cursed out all the time and you have to contend with the fact that, you know, YouTube offers you a deal to put ads on your thing and you get a little few pennies in your bucket, and then they turn around and basically yank that away if they don't agree with what you got to say. Plus the search ratings, they put you in the bottom of the search ratings, so you ain't going to make no money on YouTube these days the way they got it set up unless you're one of YouTube's friends or something like that. You know, it doesn't matter. It does, but it doesn't. You know, so when the finances get around, I can, you know, do more projects and stuff like that. But the most part, just want to try to get the message out to inspire people out there about working outside the box and you know, understanding you're not getting a full story from science, you're not getting a full story from the government, you're not getting a full story from the mainstream media or even, you know, the average Joe out there. You got people that will talk about UFOs all day long until they're blue in the face and they believe that there's flying saucers out there, and then turn around and tell you that these things that supposedly defy the laws of physics, you can't defy the laws of physics. Seriously? You know, they'll talk about Bigfoot, they'll talk about all kinds of things. They'll talk about all kinds of, you know, frequency ranges for everything. You know, teleportation, time travel, everything. All this, if you understand energy, if you understand everything, I don't think that there's anything that isn't possible. Especially if this turns out to be some sort of digital simulation. You know, there might be rules in the situation. But it doesn't mean that it ain't possible just because science hasn't been able to figure it out yet. There's possibilities. Everything's possible. Especially when you start talking about quantum physics. But either way, the big deal is trying to get down to the simple, putting the simple together so that people around the world can enjoy energy that would give them the same luxuries as everybody else in the world. You know, certain reasons why they don't want, you know, places in Africa to have, you know, the same kind of infrastructure, because that might make them powerful, you know. That's a big continent. You make them powerful, you don't want them ruling the world. Everybody's spending all their time trying to become more financially and industrialized than the next and try to become the most powerful nation in the world. And all these things that we talk about, you know, making the world better and ending the wars and craziness, you know, and helping everybody out, they go by the wayside. So as many as all the millions of people that are seeking free energy so that they don't have to pay electric bill, the majority of those are ones that help to hinder anything that would have to do with free energy. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough. You're just not paying attention, because we've explained it over and over and over again. Nature is energy. So are you. And there's people out there that'll try to use those words to try to debunk anything that I say. If you understand the physics of and the basic science and the mechanics of how things work, it's not that hard to start to engineer things using those physics to your advantage. Everything from magnetic fields to the way we place magnets on rotors could make the ultimate difference, you know. Like, for example, this one rotor that I've got, all the magnets on each side of them are facing the same direction, but in opposing directions. So that means that since the material that I'm using doesn't have the shielding necessary, that means it still gets the change in magnetic field, because the magnet that's on the opposite side is putting a negative towards the other direction, so you'll get a different field waveform as these magnets are spinning around. All these magnets on this side are facing the same direction, and all the magnets are facing the other direction, all the same direction, but both of the rear of those magnets are in between the two that are facing out on the opposite side. So when you're passing these through coils, you get a different waveform than you would have otherwise had you alternated on one side, you know, positive, negative, or north, south, all the way around. So they're all south on one side, they're all south on the other side, and the backs of them, since the magnetic, there's no magnetic shielding in between there, are the differences. The north's going in the opposite direction, which makes this a little bit different than your standard model. And it was done that way intentionally to get a specific waveform that would be more efficient. Excuse me. Might need to get me some honey. But either way, it's about engineering with, you know, the technology and the knowledge that we've got right now, all the physics that are available, all the basic science and mechanics that are available, engineering it to be the best efficiency. And what, by the time it's all said and done, at the very least, it's going to be the most efficient generator, you know, in the history of time because of that fact. When I get you know, all the coils and everything set in there, and I do a live stream and I explain it to you, hopefully you'll be a little bit ahead of the game because of today's show or whatever, and you'll understand a little bit more. But I will explain to you in graphic detail how and why it is that I'm doing things the way that I'm doing, and how I'm actually pulsing these coils. Normally these motors would take a lot more power to run, but they're not going to have to even run constant because of the way that you know, they're going to be pulsed. But either way, we'll get around to that, and I'd like to get around to it a lot sooner, but you know, I got to build a few things. I got to build a vacuum forming table so that I can vacuum form some molds to pour the resins to hold the coils and stuff in there, and it's taken me a lot longer because of resources to get this doggone vacuum forming table and the materials necessary to make the molds. I'm sure there's probably other ways, but the only way that I know that I can see, you know, exactly what's going on, you know, I'm using like clear acrylic so that I can show, you know, while you're looking through this thing, you can see the inner workings. This is why I do a lot of these machines, these, you know, prototypes the way that I do, because I want you to understand how this thing is functioning. I want you to see that there ain't no hidden batteries or anything like that, and that, you know, you can see the voltages. I'm not necessarily as worried about voltage in as voltage out, because I know I can ramp the voltage way up. I can put 12 volts in, I can get hundreds of thousands of volts out. That's not the problem. You got to argue against these other people out there that want to talk about watts in, watts out. I'm not worried about that right now. I'm worried about moving this energy in a specific way to make it more efficient, to have a lot more pressure, to be able to charge the system up, that then in turn, then you can start running that system back to the direction where your standard measurement equipment's actually going to function. Right now, you couldn't measure this with the standard measuring equipment. You know, you could measure what the motor's draining, but as far as the output, the way that the frequency is going to be, you know, ran, it's a whole different ball game then. Because now you're talking about using an oscilloscope to try to get at least some sort of idea how many volts is actually putting out. Anyway, it all makes sense. But if you've been listening long enough, you understand what I'm talking about already anyway. So let me play some more of this right here.
The triumph of America's space exploration program gave way to the era of limits in the late 70s. The infamous energy crisis made us all aware of our dependence on finite resources.
Many inventors promised dramatic results with devices they said would solve the crisis. Claims of over-unity, where power output exceeds input, were routinely announced. But when put to the test, most of their crude prototypes performed poorly, or not at all. Measuring methods were, and still are, extremely difficult to perform accurately.
All right, let's pause that for a second. He just basically said what I said, but the people that built these devices right there, you know, they're not working in the standard sense that the conventional generators are working. And so there's going to be differences in there, even into the power output, you know, but it's still the same amount of voltage. And even though they might have, according to the measurements, failed, there's still something to be learned in each one of these devices. So, you know, when it comes down to somebody producing a free energy device, don't overlook the simple of every single one of these devices that have some physics in there that are important.
Cubit did achieve modest gains in output, were dismissed by mainstream academia and denied patents. And without patent protection, investors have no financial incentive to lay out the millions of dollars it takes to mass produce and market these devices, no matter how promising.
Also, there was one other thing that he had said under there about the crude devices that they put together. Even this one I got over here, it's not perfectly precise. It's not milled to perfectly mathematical standards where it's precision, where it's all balanced out perfectly. And so in that, there will be some losses in the system. But the way that I'm going to be pulling this power off of this generator isn't going to be the standard conventional way of directly connecting it to a load. I'm going to shift this power away. All I need this thing to do for its purpose is to produce a specific frequency and higher voltages and move that power away from that generator. So that generator never has to work harder. And even the way that I'm going to be putting the power into the electric motor and into the actual circuitry itself is going to be different than the standard conventional way, because we're actually putting more power to these circuits than they actually need to run. If you take these circuits and you turn up a variable power supply, you can find that sweet spot to where this thing is running. Now, is it blazing that motor around? No, but it doesn't need to. Because if you understand the tip speed of a flywheel, then you can see that you can actually use basically the equivalence of a gearbox to speed things up or slow them down. And in reality, at the hertz range that we're actually running anything out there anyway, you get it going too fast, you develop too high of a frequency. So by using a variable speed, you can speed it up or slow it down to right where you want it to be, to where it's doing the job. Which means that the way that you deliver the power from your power source to the actual circuit, it's not getting the circuit hot because it's not trying to pull too much power or push too much power into that circuit. And on the opposite side of the spectrum, when that circuit's pushing its power out to the electric motor, there's a difference in the way that the system allows that power to get to that motor. And so the motor is only accepting what it needs to run. You're not pushing too much power to that. So that means that excess power ain't feeding back on the circuit, so it's not being wasted in the form of heat. It's not going to cause the circuits to get hot. And if you understand what I'm talking about, or if you've seen any of my live streams on Twitch, which I haven't done for a while, and I haven't even done a live stream on YouTube for a while for the same reasons I explained earlier. But the way that I'm running the signal generator, the way that I'm putting the power to the microwave oven transformer, and the way I'm taking the power off of the transformer and running it through a bridge rectifier, that entire process is not causing anything in the system to get hot. The only portion of heat that is actually generated from the way that I'm doing this is the power supply, the wall adapters that use to run the signal generator, because that wall outlet puts out more power than that adapter actually needs to run. So even if you took the energy off of that wall outlet and you turned it way down to where it's still doing its job, it's still putting out its 5 volts, but it's not accepting any more power than it actually needs to run the primary to induce the current into the secondary, and then turn that from AC current down to DC current, and all those systems will stay cooler because they're not accepting more energy than they can actually use. So let's move along here.
The technology. And after all, classical Newtonian dynamics got us to the moon, and Einstein's E equals MC squared explained that energy could neither be created nor destroyed. Anything else which seemed otherwise was labeled perpetual motion, unworthy of scientific examination.
When I started out in 1980, free energy was something that we didn't talk about. We talked about it behind closed doors. The conferences often were visited by people we didn't know, and the information was spread in various means so that all of a sudden unconventional energy, which was a phrase we developed, was appearing in military solicitations. So it's a controversial topic that at that time actually had the connotation that there was something from nothing. Therefore, it was unscientific, and these are a bunch of lunatics who are talking. And sooner or later, the scientists will educate them about what's the various laws of physics that are being violated.
But ain't none of the laws of physics actually being violated if you understand the concept of what's going on. All the static energy that's out there, this whole world is dynamic. And all these physics that are going on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, if you're tapping into that, even something to the simple of radio waves. We got TV, you know. We used to have analog, now we got digital TV. All it is is a different frequency range. It's as simple as that. We slap the water and it sends out waves, and we use those waves to transfer data. There ain't no difference in there. And so, you know, when you talk about, you know, these laws of physics being violated, they're not being violated. You're just not understanding that if you're using energy in a different fashion, you're not going to be able to get a high voltage power supply to run a doggone electric motor that's only set up for 20 to 60 hertz. It's the timing. It's a different type of energy, but you can still slow that high voltage down to the extent where then you can turn around and use that same amount of energy to run that same device. It's about understanding what's actually occurring. You know, these folks, science guys that sit there and try to think they're going to teach somebody about laws of physics, they got their nose so far in the book they can't see past that book.
Most of the scientists equated any notion of a free energy or over-unity device as being a perpetual motion machine, and therefore utter nonsense. You see, it's a play on words. The scientists interpreted it one way. The guy is trying to do it by looking at it as an open system. Now, fortunately, today we have a type of thermodynamics. Nobel prizes have been issued for it. To Prigogine, for example, four systems not in thermodynamic equilibrium that do have their open systems, and the energy does flow in from outside and through them. Those kinds of systems can produce over unity. It's all perfectly legitimate physics.
Today, most scientists are unaware of the literature that the zero point energy even exists, mainly because most scientists aren't physicists. Now, I went to school and I became a PhD in electrical engineering and systems engineering, and not one professor ever heard of it. and yet there it was in the library. So part of it is most scientists are specialists in their own area, and science today is very fragmented. Now, for those that know that the zero-point energy exists, they may argue, well, it's random in its nature, and therefore it can't be tapped as an energy source. But very recent work in thermodynamics by Ilya Prigogine, who won the Nobel Prize in 1978, shows how this energy could become self-organized if the proper systems conditions could be fulfilled. And that's what's happening in some of the experiments and some of the inventions that are tapping this energy and producing anomalous energy. Another resistance is the physics community, especially, that really know about this energy, realize if you could tap it, everything would change. The nature of physics would change. The most important foundation of all physics would then be the quantum energy that's embedded in space. And really, we don't understand it. And it's extremely mathematically difficult to do computations in it. And it turns out it's probably going to be the basis of string theory in the future.
And therefore, what seems to be nothing will actually be understood as a field effect, as a tapping of energy that is already available but can't be seen. Even the radio waves, for example, the television set is a good example. If you show that to a primitive tribe, it looks like a magical box. But it's sort of converting invisible energy in the air to signals and pictures.
The paddle wheel in the river that's used to power a mill, grind corn, is a free energy device. So is a windmill, for example. What we mean is we are taking the energy from an external source and using it. So it's an open system, and the environment of the system is furnishing a flow of energy into the system, which the system is then collecting and using. Primary requirements, it has to be an open system. It has to have an external source of energy to furnish the energy that we're going to use. And therefore, it's no more mysterious than a windmill.
That's what I've been trying to say.
And now we're coming full circle and realizing that physics and metaphysics, that some of the notions of the 19th century, such as the ether and the vortex, are now being dusted off. And those ideas are being melded with modern experiments, plus quantum mechanics and so forth, into this magnificent synthesis of what I call sacred science, of a whole new science, a whole new physics in which consciousness reigns supreme.
And that it is time that world governments officially acknowledge...
Yeah, talking about UFOs.
Oh, any particular guru or a leader or anything like that, that we have everything we need in the universe that's ours to have right now. And these are some of the basic essence principles that lie underneath the discovery of free energy.
So anyway, you know, there's a lot of people out there that believe that there's an alien conspiracy and that the government's been hiding it for all these years and that we've got UFO technology and all this kind of stuff, but those same people will still argue with you about the physics of stuff. I don't understand why they do that, but that's what they do. But if we really had technology such as what they're talking about, you know, you could build an aircraft or any kind of spacecraft or whatever that could do the things that they say are being done, then that means that they figured out a way to actually tap into that external energy, like what's his name was saying on there earlier. I can't even remember his name. I'm going to have to look it up. Anyway, so if you have an outside source such as wind turning a wind turbine, then that's free energy right there. The same thing with hydroelectrics or thermoelectrics or whatever. The way that they muddy the deal up is to try to, you know, put number one after, if you go out on YouTube and you type in free electricity, you're going to find tons and tons of bogus devices and ridiculousness. Just sheer ridiculousness. Things that don't even have any basis in real, you know, physics or science. And that's what you get whenever you try to say anything's free energy. But if these folks stop trying to twist around the terminology and listen to what we've been saying all along, you got a solar panel out there, and it's free energy. just because you don't use that solar panel efficiently, you know, when the sun's up, they're actually designing solar panels that'll work even when the sun's down. But nonetheless, you store that energy during the daytime. If you understand how to use that energy incredibly efficient, then you only have to run it half the day. You only have to gather energy half the day because it'll store that energy to get you through the entire night when the sun comes back up again. All you need to know is, how many hours can you run a battery, you know, once you've fully charged up. So if you get one, let's just say hypothetically, you get 1 hour out of your battery for the entire system that you're trying to run during the nighttime, then just add another battery. There's 2 hours, and then 3 hours, and then 4 hours, and however many hours it takes, how many ever batteries it takes to give you those extra hours per deal. The larger your bank, the more you're going to buy yourself over to the next day. But regardless, you know, when everybody goes to sleep at night, they, don't use near as much electricity because they turn the lights off and stuff like that, outside of, using heat or, fans or AC units or something like that, all of which can be improved on efficiency-wise. None of them actually take near the amount of power to use than we're actually using. But we need a understanding of a better way to use what we've already been provided, and trying to share that with people and saying free energy is basically counterproductive. It's become, you're a nutcase if you talk about free electricity, when in reality there's free electricity everywhere. You just haven't figured out how to tap into it. You haven't built the devices to tap into it. And it's easily to replicate the physics of what nature's already done in order to get those same results going. And so if the world really wanted free energy, it would already be done. Now, the individual who's paying a light bill really wants free energy. And we're attempting to do just that, to give them exactly what they need. But even those folks have to take a little bit of understanding of what's going on. So that, because obviously myself, I can't afford to go around and buy everybody a generator. I can't afford to go around and set everybody's thing up, personally. I'd be around forever and a day. Plus that, I'd probably get whacked before I even got started because of the fact that for every person I take off the power grid, that's less dollar in the power industry's pocket, and they're not going to be too happy about all that. But if the power industry and the people out there were really truthful in what they say they want, clean, renewable, alternative energy, then we would already have it right now. Right here, right now, today, we have every single solution available and all the resources necessary, with the exception of the resources that would be, people uniting and coming together and building devices using, combined resources such as financial or even tools for that matter, or talent. That's what's holding us back. It isn't that we can't do it, it's that we can't come together and do it. If we actually really took the time to work with each other, we could get these things built. It wouldn't be no problem. So let me play a little bit more of this.
The force of inertia is known in mechanics, but until only recently, it had been considered too weak and difficult to harness for propulsion. According to some theorists, like Hal Puthoff, inertia, like gravity, is what occurs when we try to accelerate an object against the zero-point fluctuations in the vacuum. We run into resistance, literally. Canadian inventor Roy Thunson has developed an inertial impulse propulsion engine which overcomes that resistance using centrifugal force. It pushes against nothing and emits no exhaust, but it's been calculated to be 20 times more efficient than a jet engine. Here, the Thornton inertial propulsion drive powers a canoe and a swimming pool. The motor, which is housed in a box, never contacts the water or air. In the pendulum test, unidirectional force is being generated to keep the pendulum to one side.
Whether or not we can demonstrate, as I have, with engineering analysis and models that will climb an incline, will pass a pendulum test, in other words, stay on one side of the pendulum consistently, and even power a canoe in a swimming pool, commercialization of that device is still a very difficult road. And you see that in many inventions, but what I like to emphasize is my F over P measurement of that is literally 20 times better than the jet engine. A jet engine, typically a commercial jet engine, the DC-9, I think is the one that I analyzed, has about 0.016 newtons per watt. And in this is in the metric system. Now, when you look at the Thornton, he's able to achieve 0.32 newtons per watt, only 20 times better than the jet engine.
Roy Thornton is developing refinements to his system to increase its performance. Unfortunately, like many inventors, even with a U.S. patent in hand, he has yet to find sufficient investment capital to bring his motor to the marketplace.
The propulsion force does in fact exist.
So, trying to get it on, good morning, Yolance. Trying to get, anything on the market, you can see by, you know, what's happened to people in the past of how hard it is to do that. And, you know, when it comes down to actually building things, when somebody could have the most brilliant minds in the world, but if they don't have the resources, then they're not going to be able to build precision. What the heck did I do here? I hit the wrong button. Sorry. They're not going to be able to build precision equipment, you know, in a garage, the lab, or basement setting, or whatever like that. You know, it takes somebody with some skill set and some milling equipment and measuring tools in order to make things to where they're really efficient and they don't wobble too much or whatever. That's probably why a lot of these devices that could have worked a lot better than they did didn't work out so well, because of the fact that they had to build a crude one in order to try to show people the anomaly and say, look, if this was built better, then it would be really efficient and it would work. But nobody will ever give them the opportunity to risk any kind of capital, or even their reputation for that matter, to give these folks a chance. For example, when I talked about building an engine specifically engineered to run on pure water, pure distilled water, just using the hydrogen and oxygen from that, the person that I tried to get to help me was really talented and had tools that actually could have made it possible. But because of their education, and the fact that they couldn't think outside of the laws of physics or outside the box to understand that the laws of physics aren't there to hinder you, that if you use them to your advantage, we know if we do certain things to water, then it will boil. And we know that, you know, if we boil that water, that we can change it from a liquid to a gas, which is essentially steam. And if we keep doing this, you know, eventually we're generating heat and we could actually get those molecules bouncing around so rapidly that they quite literally separate the hydrogen and oxygen, which has a reaction when that occurs. But because we understand the physics of water, We could actually use the water as the liquid in its liquid state for hydraulics, and we could use it in its gaseous state to turn turbines, and we could separate it even farther, where now it could actually be compressed and it could actually be cracked and then turn around and ignite the hydrogen and oxygen to get an implosion from one and an explosion from the other. So specifically designing that engine to use that water as fuel. Now, if they actually took the time, this particular individual would have took the time to just try it before they denied it, and then came out with a different result than what my mind has told me is possible, then it's understandable. But they didn't want to take that chance that they go through all the trouble and do this work and then it doesn't function like I say it would. Nonetheless, that would mean that you would have to rewrite physics, because everything that I explained to him was according to the laws of physics. And so that means that the physics had to be wrong. And if the physics are wrong, then that means that opens the gate up for a lot more things to be possible. So, you know, with that said, everything out there being theoretical, and if you tried it and it works, then you might just be surprised at how fast if the people would get on board with it. You know, you build a carburetor that gets many miles to the gallon, and you're going to get some attention. And mostly, you know, if you ain't slick about how you actually provide that information, you'll get the intention from the wrong people, and that's not a good thing. So let's move on a little bit further here.
Most people would agree you can't get something for nothing. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And yet, we get our oxygen free from the air we breathe. We get sunlight free and water. That used to be free until bottled drinking water came along. But what about energy? We've always had to pay for that, whether it's wood or coal, oil or electricity. It's always been the rule that you can never get back more energy than what you put in the first place. That's a fundamental law of nature. Physicists of the 19th century figured that out with the first law of thermodynamics, the conservation of energy. Maybe so. But science has come a long way since then. And laws? Well, there's never been one that hasn't been broken. At the turn of the last century, Nikola Tesla, the great inventor who gave us alternating current and the Tesla coil, stated,
"Electric power is everywhere present in unlimited quantities. I can drive the world's machinery without the need of coal, oil, gas, or any other fuel. This new power for the driving of the world's machinery will be derived from the energy which operates the universe, the cosmic energy."
With over 200 patents to his name, Tesla was well on his way to transmitting electric power without wires when he ran into trouble with J.P. Morgan and the financial interest of 1901. His ambitious Wardenclyffe project to magnify and transmit power to ships at sea and eventually to provide free electricity for the whole world was scuttled by Morgan, leaving Tesla penniless and disillusioned. The wealthy industrialist of the time knew that their vast plans to wire the world with copper from the mines they owned would be upset if they could no longer control the supply and means of delivery. Tesla's beliefs about developing technology in harmony with nature conflicted with the prevailing American attitude at the time that mankind was put on earth to subdue and dominate nature. Little by little, Tesla was denounced as a crackpot and deleted from the historical record. At the time of his death in 1943, Tesla's truckloads of scientific papers were seized by U.S. government agencies. Who knows what ideas and remarkable devices our world could have inherited if only his genius was recognized.
When J.P. Morgan prohibited Tesla from broadcasting electric power overseas with Wardenclyffe Tower, he said, "I can't put a meter on it, therefore I won't finance it." That literally changed the course of history, and for the past almost 100 years, we've been suffering under that profit motive.
All right, somehow or another, I actually skipped ahead here. Let's see if I can get back to where I was. Let's go right here.
Roy Thornton is developing refinements to his system to increase its performance. Unfortunately, like many inventors, even with a U.S. patent in hand, he's yet to find sufficient investment capital to bring his motor to the marketplace.
The propulsion force does in fact exist.
We've all seen these little toy gizmos that demonstrate lightning in a bottle. It's the electric phenomenon called plasma discharge. Various inventors, working independently, are coming up with some exotic combinations of gases, metals, and processes to actually squeeze excess electrical energy out of this phenomenon of nature.
In 1996, Paulo and Alexandra Correa received the first patent for such a device called the Pulsed Abnormal Glow Discharge Reactor, the first of its kind to convert plasma discharge directly into electricity.
This is a standard.
Utah inventor Paul Panto has developed what he calls the GEAT fuel processor, a plasma generator similar to a super carburetor that actually appears to run on 80% water and is entirely non-polluting.
This device replaces the carburetor and exhaust and combines them as one unit, whereas this end of it acts as a miniature refinery, allowing the engine to run on everything from battery acid and water mixed to crude oil right out of the ground. This is Angola crude, 39.5 gravity. The exhaust coming down goes around and comes out here at the far end. The center chamber draws some of the heat from the exhaust. Plus, this tube takes some of the exhaust gases, takes them up into the chamber, and bubbles them down to the bottom. The bubbles, as it comes through the fuel, are brought up to the top of the chamber, picked up through a tube, and fed at the center of the exhaust pipe. While they're being fed up the exhaust pipe, they are in a vacuum, and there's a heat exchange which occurs. This process has been argued a few times to be either a plasma field, an electro field. We do know that it does have a slight radiation, which is not alpha, beta, or gamma. We do have x-rays to show that whatever is coming from the unit does get affected different from stainless steel than the regular steel. Yep. The temperature of the exhaust is the same as the air temperature going in from the air portion up here. Normally 1-3% more oxygen coming out of the tailpipe than there is in the air we're breathing. And no carbon at all.
Carbon vanishes.
I wouldn't say vanishes, I would say transmuted into some other substance, a lighter element, because we have an abundance of lighter elements here that are not explained from down here. But during the heat process, there are molecular changes. After running this engine from 1983 until now, and many times we had it running eight and a half hours a day, we have never had to change spark plug, change the oil, or clean it. We have taken the head off three times to inspect the inside of it, and it's been spotless.
What we have here is the Pantone GEAT device fitted to a Ford 2300cc four-cylinder engine. As you can see, we have a see-through container here, which holds the fuel. As the engine is started, air is drawn in by vacuum through the fuel and bubbles the fuel, the vapors of which are drawn off here. They travel down this hose into our reaction chamber. They go up the reaction chamber and return back out here to be intake, to be taken into the engine through this tube. This is our air filter, and this tube is connected to another valve, which are controlled by this linkage, operating the air intake and the fuel intake. This is the valve that controls the return air going through this tube into the bummer.
Anyway, we could give example after example after example of all different types of things, from wood gasifiers, and back in the day when they actually used wood gasifiers to run when they were running low on fuel, different ways that people have been able to run, you know, totally unrefined crude oil into internal combustion engines. Even to the extent of water injection systems that were way back in avionics and, hydrogen technology, what like Stan Myers was doing and other people out there. There are, you know, hydrogen cells and hydrogen engines and different researches right now. Imagine you build an engine that runs on pure distilled water. Finding fuel now is not even a remote problem. And let's say you need some voltage in order to keep the thing going. So you got a generator that it's actually engineered to run on water as the fuel by using physics to break this water down into its smallest molecules. And with modern technology available, such as sonic vaporization technology, induction heating, using compression ignition, like a diesel engine, and so on down the line. You actually would start running this like a steam engine, and then it would turn into a hydrogen machine, a hydrogen engine, and oxygen. And all of this is doable with the science that's available right now. And the whole purpose is to generate electricity using this process. So you wouldn't have to have, what they would like to classify as fossil fuel in order to produce the amount of power necessary to run the inefficient generator heads that we're running right now. But imagine if you took the inefficient generator heads and you started running them with the same concept of what I've been talking about, where you pull that power away from it. That would make that water engine even more efficient. So the room of improvement by the way that you deliver the energy to the system would make all the difference in the world about how long it lasts, whether or not you had to change oil. You know, there were people running things that weren't standard, conventional ways of running it. Engines. They were running off of all kinds of things. There are people running off of French fry oil or whatever, you know, biodiesels, all this kind of stuff. If you understand the physics of what's going on and the basic science to it, everything out there is fuel. You know, and water would be the best fuel if you knew how to separate the hydrogen and oxygen with the least amount of input, which is what I've been trying to explain for a long time. Stan Myers tried to do it, and multiple other people have been successful in doing it. But to get it out there on the market, that's where, you know, they draw the line. You can talk about it, but you can't do it, that kind of thing. And if it's proven technology, somebody's going to step in there and want to try to suppress it. Now there's people out there saying, oh, they don't suppress free energy. If it could be done, they would have already done it. They probably are already doing it. They probably got some really incredible generating for the military industrial complex, so that if the lights ever went out, they wouldn't be part of that system. You know, like little miniature nuclear power plants hidden up in the side of Cheyenne Mountain or something like that, you know. Or the doggone Area 51 down there. Who knows what kind of generating systems they got, backup systems, and you know for a fact that they probably got a backup system for a backup system, plus they ain't got no problem keeping fresh water into the deal, you know? So, to end all the wars and end all the starvation and all the sickness in the world, there's people out there that have good reason why not to do so. Because that basically cuts into their power. So, Yolantz and People for People said, right, aren't the space shuttles running off of something free if they really exist? Laugh out loud. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, if NASA does what NASA says that they can do, well, if it's reality, then they got some pretty impressive technology to be able to keep up, you know, something that they claim going on out there. But either way, giving the devil his due, if you got that kind of technology, it might be a case. There's actually a YouTuber out there that says that jet engines, modern day jet airplanes, don't run the way you think they do. They don't carry near the amount of fuel that you think they do. Yet they're actually using the technique for bringing, once they get the thing up to operating temperature, they suck the atmosphere in like a ramjet, and that is what actually runs the fuel. So they're burning, they're using water as a fuel, hydrogen and oxygen and nitrogen as a fuel from the atmosphere, instead of using all the what they said was the fuel that they take so many gallons of jetliner fuel in order to run. But the guy that was talking about it was asking the question, where do you put all this fuel in the skeleton of this plane? And how much would all this fuel weigh if you had as many gallons as they said that they did in there? Which means that you're on a full tank, it might take you a little while to get up in the air because you're a lot heavier than you should be. And then as you get going along, you might become a little bit more efficient because you're burning off some of that fuel. By the time you get to the other side, you're almost out of fuel, so that when you land, if there is a disaster, you're not blowing up on the runway, so to speak. So, I'm agreeing with Redemptia. I think we've been told so many lies. There's so many lies out there. It's hard to weed through all of it. But here at Mad Science, we're willing to think outside the box, and we're willing to ask the tough questions. Basically, I guess I've been still lobbying to reach out to try to grab the dream team out there to bring people together to actually build things that are possible, you know, to test them. If, for example, we prove the water engine is possible, you know, using all the physics, induction heating with a ZBS driver and a coil, you know, we circulate water through that coil and that heats the cylinder up. I've explained this in other podcasts, but trying to get people to get past their education and think about it logically with, real proven science and physics and mechanics, it's almost impossible. I just don't understand. You know, on one hand, everybody complaining about nuclear power. They're complaining about pollution from coal power. They're complaining about the diesel and petrol pollution, industry pollution, all this kind of stuff. And you put a solution on the table, even if it's only a potential solution and nobody's willing to look farther past than what the school book says, then either there's some hypocrisy going on or they wasn't really intending on doing anything to begin with. It was just a way to convince you that there was a problem so that, number one, they can stay in control. Number two, they can still make money off of you because you're afraid that the world is going to end in 12 years, if you know what I'm saying. So let's play a little bit more of this real quick. Thank you.
hydrocarbon fuel in, even if it's mixed with water. You have to get carbon out. And he's claiming that there are no CO or CO2 emissions from this, and there appear to be none visually. That is, there appear to be no soot particles coming out of the exhaust. So I hold out some hopes for this.
So our demonstration units that will be going out to about 25,000 stations between now and the end of the year or early next year are being retrofit as we speak now to include our system in the exhaust pipe and our injector body here with standard equipment that normally is supplied from the factory so that we can get it out to the public as quickly as possible.
Hopefully after being rejected by dozens of U.S. manufacturers, Pantone now has contracts with several major foreign countries. Recently, several U.S. companies have decided to take a second look.
But if they took a second look, then why isn't it on the market? Because these are older videos. You see what I'm trying to say here, folks? There's a lot of people out there that when they don't comply with the system, when they don't sell out, they try to get them for all kinds of things. They try to basically frame them up for fraud or whatever. And then when that information gets out there into the general public, like when somebody's searching around on YouTube for alternative energy, and they find out that, oh, wait, you know, I heard about this guy. Yeah, but didn't he get arrested for fraud? You know, and so basically just shot the whole thing. Instead of them going through the process of replicating, repeating, and proving or disproving, they just walked away because, well, yeah, I heard that guy went to jail for fraud. They did that to John Bedini, and they did that to all these different researchers out there. I can't remember the guy's name that was on there earlier. It'll hit me when I ain't thinking about it, but there's a lot of different researchers that went by the wayside because of the same doggone thing. You know, they had a good working device. They were trying to share it with people. They needed either investors in the thing, which basically investors, some did and some didn't want to try to get involved. Some folks knew that if you come up against the power companies like the oil industries, they, you know, there were dirty deals that were going to go down. And even companies that would, people that would have invested, probably gotten threatened so that they wouldn't, you know, help invest into this. It's going to take the average Joe, you know. All this information, all these technologies eventually will be part of society. But by the time it gets there, the question is, who's going to be in control of this technology? The military-industrial complex, the banking systems, the energy industry. You know, it ain't no such thing as a free energy device. If you get an energy device that just basically uses nature's energy in an efficient manner and gives you what would have been free electricity, but now you got to pay for the luxury of using it, like solar technology. And how much trouble that people get when they're trying to put wind generating systems up. And the environmentalists, the so-called environmentalists, coming out complaining, saying the windmills are going to chop up the birds, and stupid people coming out of the woodworks and saying that solar panels are going to drain off all the energy of the sun and we're all going to freeze to death and so on down the line. Ridiculous stuff. That's why between the free electricity frauds on YouTube that make out these stupid devices to make the rest of us look ignorant, and between the suppression of really good researchers, between the so-called educated geeks going out there trolling the heck out of people talking about free energy or over unity or zero point or alternative energy stuff, you know, there's more people out there attacking people like myself than there are people assisting people like myself. You know, when I'm footing the budget for everything, every once in a while somebody will come along and help a little bit, you know, and that's appreciated because we get a lot of things done when that happens. You know, speeds the process up, but I always make sure that they got something in return for what, you know, help that they help me, I help them, that kind of thing. That's the way it should be. And I still haven't heard from my friend that I was working on his generator with, you know, helping him troubleshoot that. You know, last I heard, dang, was working, and, you know, everything was going fine, and I still haven't heard from him back. Even sent a physical letter in the mail, still haven't heard nothing back. All I want to know is my friend's all right. But if he's got a working device and somebody found out about it who that didn't want people to know about it, well, who knows what's going on. And it's frustrating. Because I know it's possible. And I know that the only way we're ever going to get it is when we, the people, decide to take it for ourselves. When we stop, basically letting the system step on the necks of our brothers and sisters, and we actually, you know, come together and prove the technology and show it to everybody. That's the only way we're ever going to get this thing that we call free energy. That's our only hope. And so, you know, I bring these radio shows together. I put all kinds of examples down of what people are working on, just as to point out the truth. You know, if NASA can do what NASA says, then we should have amazing technologies right now. If everything that they say is the truth, if it's all based on science, if the laws of physics are true, then what I'm saying to you right here now is true. And it's irrefutable, according to science. If the laws of physics are written in stone, then the only option is that if I'm wrong in saying the things that I've been saying to all you people out there, then the laws of physics are wrong. They need to be rewritten. That means that you've been lied to this whole time, and we've been held back by people who are supposed in the know of everything. So, in order to be able to get folks together, we need to figure out a way to, you know, get past the egos. We need to figure out a way to, you know, talk to people so that they're not running away instead of jumping in there pitching in. I don't know how to solve that. I can give you all the information under the sun. I can even tell you exactly how I built every single thing that I built. But if it just goes from my self to you, and that's where it stops, then what good has it done the world? What good does it do the world to put a free energy device on the table if nobody's willing to, you know, run with it? Now, I'll tell you one thing's for sure. If it's provable and it catches the wrong eye, believe me, there are people in this world that will take that and run with it. And you'll never see it again. Just like all these other researchers out there, Paul Pantone and all of them that you don't hear anymore about. Stan Myers, you know, and all the things. Every single one of these researchers, you go out there and there's always somebody who has something bad to say about this. That last video that I posted in there that I didn't play was a man mocking Tesla. And if you listen to him at the end talking about the guy, you know, Tesla supposedly in love with a pigeon or whatever. I don't know where all those stories came from. Tesla was eccentric is what they said. But nonetheless, he got cheated out of his recognition for a lot of research that he did. And we're using a lot of technology that was based off of his research all that time. And so if it goes all the way back to those years and all the researchers back then what's to say that it ain't still happening today, that there ain't suppression going on? And while they tried to pass him off as a crackpot, they still wanted his information. They still wanted his notes and his writing and his research. And where did it go? What's it being used for today? Have they quite literally used his technology to build advanced machinery and advanced weaponry? Have they done, the research? Because places like Los Alamos and stuff like that, they got an unlimited budget. There's hidden laboratories all over related to the government that have an unlimited budget. Now that's been $50 million or $1 billion to send money over to the UN Climate Change Fund. But do you think that they would spend $50 million or $50 billion to back a researcher such as myself or any of these researchers that came together with technology that we still talk about today? Nope. They won't. They'll waste money on a lie, knowing it's a lie, just to keep you in the dark and to keep you satisfied with, well, we're doing something. You know, we're sending all this money to the UN climate change. Where's that money go? It supposedly goes into, you know, research to try to combat global warming / climate change / climate disruption. You talk against any of that on YouTube, and they'll put a little banner up under there giving everybody a contradictory story. They can't just let these people to listen to the information, go out there and test it for themselves. No, they have to propagandize them. They have to lie to them. They have to suppress that researcher. And all the videos that you put out there, if you're not slick about how you do it, you end up like all the prior researchers. My videos were there to open minds, open eyes to possibilities, to open up a dialogue. For the same purpose that the Knights of the Round Table exist is the same reason why the Mad Science Show exists. To open up dialogue and bring the truth, bring a platform together so that people can actually work together and get resolutions for problems in the world. Now, if we did what I've been saying and we came together, within 30 days' time, we could either prove or disprove a water engine. And if the water engine did function, like I said, and it needed a supplementary power source such as solar or wind, that's just icing on the cake. Because nature's provided more energy than we could ever use in a trillion lifetimes. Even more. But nonetheless, imagine an engine that would run off of something that is readily available everywhere. And even if you had to haul water into a desert, still, it doesn't matter. Somehow or another, cactuses live in the desert, so there must be some water out there. But either way, if this thing will run on water, and it's not polluting, but it needs a little bit of solar or some wind for the circuitry to pulse the ZVS driver that is running the induction coils, and we can extract any what would have been wasted energy so that nothing can reach its thermal breakdown, then we've got perfectly efficient machines that will generate energy enough to run the inefficient generators that we've got now. And then if we expand on those inefficient generators and use that energy in a completely different fashion than before, you got what you wanted. You got clean, renewable, alternative energy, self-sustainable. How many times do I got to say it before I get the attention of those that have the funds and the resources that would at least take my ideas and steal them from me? I don't care if I never get credit for it, as long as people take the ideas and run with it. The whole purpose of this wasn't to get famous or rich. It was to solve problems that they said that we had. We're up against a brick wall. We're under attack, so to speak. And I'm not getting any younger. Eventually, all the things that I say will be left over to whatever podcast survives the impending doom of the internet, the impending censorship of the internet. So there's going to come a day when old Shaziz ain't around anymore, and the only thing to be left over is these words that are coming out of my mouth and links or whatever. The links might not even be there anymore as far as that goes, but if nobody takes these ideas and expands on them and adds their ideas with it. Nobody tries it. They'll never know. And then when you look ahead into the future and you see how the future is actually running, then and only then, if somebody stumbles onto what I said, I'll be vindicated that all of what I was talking about then could have been in the hands of the people, but it's still in the hands of the corporations and the money men of the world. Still in the hands of the governments, the military-industrial complex. And it's a shame. It's a crying shame. Because I know we can fix this world if we really, truly want. But we have to get past all the craziness. They spent so much time trying to keep us fighting each other, trolling each other, treating each other poorly, going to war with one another, lying and stealing from each other. If you had a group of individuals willing to put all that aside and just work for the betterment of humanity, you don't have to tackle the beast in order to win against that beast. You only got to tackle your ego. If the world isn't all about you, instead it's all about us, we'll make it. Otherwise, it's what we see is what we get. Everything that what we have witnessed to this point will continue to be the status quo. And all this effort put into mad science and Knights of the Round Table and all the different networks out there that are trying to make the world better by pointing out truth and exposing lies, by trying to erase propaganda and put in the facts. They've got your brothers and sisters fighting against you when your brothers and sisters claim they want the same thing that you do. I don't know how to get around that outside of what I'm doing right now. To speak common sense, point out the facts, and hope that somebody will take the time to listen. That's it. So what do we really know about electricity? Very little, if any at all. The truth about anything out there is subject to whoever wants to tell the truth. And if they don't want you to know the truth, then they're simply going to tell you a lie. When these folks out there do what they do, making these fake free energy devices, they're making money. Believe me, they're making money. They're getting the advertising. If you go click on those videos, they got tons and tons of advertiser links that come on every so often. You sit there and waste your time watching, and they get paid. They're making a lot of money. But what they're really doing is stealing from humanity and hiding the truth. And then you got supposed college-educated folks out there that sit there and make fraudulent how to get free electricity videos. And it just makes it harder and harder for anyone with the truth to get seen. It's aggravating. Truly aggravating. So between the mainstream media, idiots like the Mythbusters, all these supposed smart scientists in the world, the Neil deGrasse Tysons, the Bill Nye, the science guy, all of these folks that sold their soul to the dark side in order to stick it to humanity and still get paid. I'm saying we got all the answers. When the world is ready to come together, we'll get to utilize free energy. And if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough. You're not paying attention. As far as all these devices that it would take to tap into what nature already has provided, it's basic science, it's basic physics, it's basic mechanics. And that's the secret of electricity. It's ridiculously simple. Once again, I've done and said all I can say. Maybe someday somebody will hear it. And maybe someday the world will come together. But the question is, will it be the notorious they? Or will it be the more powerful us that come together and make it so? Folks, you've been listening to Mad Science. Posted all the videos, posted all the links, shared the information. Check out Steven's resource page on the superchat.html. If you haven't been there yet, check it out. If you're interested in clean, renewable, alternative energy, and if you happen to be out there and about and you hear people complaining about global warming / climate change / climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up, or if you hear people out there talking about save the planet, ask them if they're really serious. If they really seriously want to save the planet. And then send them here. Send them to People for People first, because they got their HTTPS, so they'll probably more than likely want to click on that than they will over here at this, not secure place of Shaziz. You start off at Shaziz.com, it says it's secure, but, work your way over Shaziz Radio. They're trying to tell the world that, we're not safe, which we are safe. We're not trying to steal or harm anybody. We believe in peace and hope and love, and we believe in trying to make the world a better place. But nonetheless, we'll get it worked out one way or the other. If you like what you heard on here, please share the podcast. Share the links with each other. Help us get over that brick wall. And maybe we'll get the message out. Send your environmentalists, send your trustworthy scientists, send all the so-called debunkers, send them all. Bring them here for an open dialogue to ask the questions why it is that we have everything we've got and yet we can't resolve what science says is possible. They said they wanted 0 point. They said they wanted clean, renewable, alternative energy. Well, let's see if they can put their money where their mouth is. Let's see if the environmentalists are willing to step forward and be a part of the solution instead of part of the problem. Let's see if all these people who claim to want to save the planet are all just a bunch of talk, or they really mean what they say. If you're not supporting an alternative energy researcher out there that you've paid attention to, then you're not serious. Alright, so with that said, you've been listening to Mad Science. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Was that ant that stood up to me?
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends.
You got a laptop.
I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends.
You got a laptop.
There it is.
You got a laptop.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.